The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Arlene Weintraub, author of the expose book Selling the Fountain of Youth, which debunks the scientific basis of the anti-aging supplement industry. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish experts on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com. Or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. What is it about Jews that is notably different from other Americans? After all, we are now very much part of the mainstream of American society. A third of the Supreme Court, 12% of the Senate, even two guys in the NBA. And it can be hard to say what truly differentiates a Jewish American from a Protestant or Catholic or secular American. Are we still different in any way? I know we joke about the subject regularly. You know what a Jewish triathlon is? Gin rummy, then contract bridge, followed by a nap. That's an old joke, and nowadays you're more likely to find Jews working out in a gym and praying in a synagogue. Perhaps these days the true Jewish triathlon is really eating, complaining, and arguing. Anyway, in an era when overt anti-Semitism is nearly absent everywhere but on college campuses, and when the Anti-Defamation League is mostly employed fighting anti-Israel rather than anti-Semitic invective, it's hard to see us experiencing much in the way of real bias in American society. But of course, there can be something more subtle at work. Last week, I was introduced to the concept of micro-inequities, a new term to me, if not a new reality. Micro-inequities are the small ways in which people who have religious or cultural differences are treated in such a way that it creates an unwelcoming environment. So for Jews, this might take the form of a company lunch or picnic in which all the food options include pork. My wife had that experience at the university where she teaches, actually. Or it might be that you are assigned to work every Friday night or Saturday morning when you would actually like to attend Shabbat services. It could be a failure of management to understand that we Jews have a lot of holidays. This would mean that they aren't regular two Jewish listeners, which is a kind of micro-inequity, a form of subtle anti-Semitism by itself, don't you think? Anyway, and that it might be reasonable for you to take off both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur from work or school. But when I spoke at the conference, my principal thought was really about a different subject. It was a micro-inequity based on the ways we Jews interact. I was personally raised in a very loud home. Four kids, two parents, lots of friends and relatives around always, not a big house. Nothing was ever done quietly. Everyone expressed his or her opinion, and usually at a reasonably clear volume level, or we wouldn't be heard at all. Ideas were always subject to argument, discussion, evaluation, and testing. What could have sounded to outsiders like verbal fighting was actually the normal process of discussion for us, and intellectual arguments were never meant to be taken personally. It was the nature of how we were and how we interacted. It was Jewish, and it was all in the interests of figuring out what was best in the situations. In fact, so much of Jewish family interaction is like the Talmud, our great text of law and lore, which is essentially one very long argument, 66 volumes long, designed to discern what God wants from us in the world. When we celebrated the Global Day of Jewish Learning last week at Temple Emmanuel, which included the completion of the great Adin Steinsaltz translation of the Talmud into Hebrew, we confirmed again our commitment to this kind of direct, argumentative engagement to try to discern what God really wants from us in this world. That's the Jewish way. If we are awake, we are probably arguing. You know, two Jews, three opinions, four synagogues, one of which I wouldn't be caught dead in. I think for many non-Jews, or Jews raised in a not very Jewish environment, this kind of spirited interplay is misunderstood. It can lead to some of the micro-inequities we see in the workplace or at school. When somebody Jewish argues with you, it doesn't mean that he or she is a troublemaker or difficult or doesn't like you. It simply means they're trying to get to the heart of the matter and solve the problem the best way they think is possible. It's why we make such good lawyers, but also good scientists, good accountants, and good doctors, and, yes, good rabbis. Jews are just not good yes-men or pushovers. That is, we Jews are good people. We're just a little loud sometimes and argumentative, but for a good cause. To play us in this morning, another good cause, our pre-Chanukah musical preview, here's Avanim and the song Pitachta. Pitachta, the Chanukah psalm. I've taken off my clothes of mourning and robed myself in joy. You know, everybody wants to be young forever, and most of us are willing to pay lots of hard-earned dollars to do so. But a lot of that money is not well spent. Find out just what the only real cure for aging is from our guest this morning, Arlene Weintraub, author of Selling the Fountain of Youth. We'll be back in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. Sometimes I think my brother Vinny and I are the luckiest guys in the whole wide world. You see, to us, Mama's is more than just a restaurant. It's a connection to our past. Back in New York, food was the center of our lives. Our family got together for almost any reason to enjoy the great Italian dishes our mom used to make. The scent of slow-cooking marinara. The distinct aroma of garlic simmering in olive oil, pasta boiling on the stove. These are memories that remind me of family, friends, home. Our goal at Mama's is to serve more than just delicious Italian food. Sure, our pizza and calzones are outstanding. Our cheesecake is to die for. But we strive to serve you more. Call it atmosphere or mood. Or you can just call it love. We hope the next time you come into one of Mama's four locations, it'll become one of your pleasant memories. To Vinny and me, that's the measure of our success. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
This coming Thursday night, November 18th at 7 p.m., Temple Emmanuel and UA Presents host an evening with Menachem Pressler at Temple Emmanuel, world-renowned pianist and honorary fellow of the Jerusalem Academy of Music and Dance and the founder of the multi-Grammy Award-nominated Beaux-Arts Trio. Menachem Pressler will speak about his experiences during the Holocaust and how Mozart influenced his life. He will also play a short program on piano with light refreshments to follow. And at the event, you can get tickets for the Menachem Pressler Richard Stoltzman concert for a $25 discount. Save money, and you get to hear Menachem Pressler again. Call 327-4501 to hear Menachem Pressler at Temple Emmanuel this Thursday, November 18th at 7 p.m. 520-327-4501. We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish author Arlene Weintraub. Her new book is called Selling the Fountain of Youth, How the Anti-Aging Industry Made a Disease Out of Getting Old and Made Billions. She has over 15 years of experience writing about healthcare, pharmaceuticals, and biotechnology. She was a senior health writer based out of the New York City headquarters of Business Week. She's written literally hundreds of articles exploring both science and the business of health. She's won many awards from the New York Press Club, the Association of Healthcare Journalists, Foundation for Biomedical Research, and the American Society of Business Publication Editors. We welcome the Two Jewish this morning, Arlene Weintraub. Good morning, Arlene.
Good morning.
So everybody wants to stay young, don't they? What's wrong with trying to do that?
Well, yes, this is a quest that goes back to Ponce de Leon and the Fountain of Youth, and every generation has its own version of it. And I'm writing about the new search for the Fountain of Youth, which really revolves around hormone replacement and taking things that are dangerous, like steroids and some pretty potent supplements. And you know, it's very profit-driven, and it's not very safe. And so I think that's what's wrong with this sort of modern search for the Fountain of Youth.
Is it a realistic possibility? I mean, I remember reading a long article about couples who were all doing some form of hormone therapy and, you know, youth stuff. They could afford it. Was it really making them younger?
Well, that's the problem. There's no scientific evidence that it makes you younger. Those studies are very difficult to design, and nobody will ever do them because you'd have to do a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial for 20 years to prove that you're slowing down the aging process, and nobody can afford that, and nobody can persuade patients to put themselves at that kind of risk. So the answer is no. We don't know if it makes you younger. We do know that there are side effects. So is the risk worth taking? I don't think so.
You know, it's funny. I follow sports, and the use of human growth hormone has become, boy, almost endemic. You know, for a while it was all kinds of steroids, and there were many side effects, and now they seem to have shifted to some form of human growth hormone, which isn't as detectable, and it seems to give them performance benefits.
Yeah, and what's incredible is that the anti-aging industry kind of got caught up in all of the controversy over human growth hormone in sports. So there were a lot of news reports of such and such anti-aging clinic or such and such rejuvenation center. You know, some doctor was indicted for off-label prescribing of human growth hormone to some famous baseball star. And the fact is they've kind of become intertwined, although the people who are doing it for anti-aging like to say that they're not really juicing like the sports stars are. They're not taking these superhuman doses of it. They're just replacing what they've lost through the aging process. The problem is we don't know that that's any safer or smarter.
Amazing stuff, and obviously a huge industry. We will talk much more about how all this developed and where it's going and what's wrong with it, really, when we come back on Two Jewish with Arlene Weintraub.
At Handmaker's Senior Day programs, variety and interesting activities help Barbara Sanders really enjoy her time there.
They have a lot of activities that I like to do. They have ceramics, they have painting, they have sewing. We go out to the museums and to the parks, and we also go to the casino.
Handmaker helps seniors and disabled individuals maintain their independence longer than they might otherwise. Handmaker's flexible scheduling makes the Senior Day program very convenient, and Barbara feels right at home.
The staff is very nice. They take good care of you. you. They'll make sure that you have everything you need.
And there are other benefits, too.
All of my grandchildren have piggy banks that I've made from here. And I have a lot of ceramics in my house now because of here.
Call Handmaker at 322-7035 for more information and a complimentary one-day pass. There are new people and new friends to meet.
They're not just friendships. You know, you actually are a part of a family.
Handmaker Senior Day Program serves all faiths, centrally located on Rosemont, just south of TMC. Call 322-7035.
Sunday, November 21st, UA Presents hosts an unforgettable evening of classical music with Menachem Pressler and the New York Chamber Soloist Orchestra with Richard Stoltzman at 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. The one-night-only performance features the world's foremost clarinetist, two-time Grammy winner Richard Stoltzman, and world-renowned pianist Menachem Pressler, nominated for 6 Grammy Awards. Pressler escaped Nazi Germany and immigrated to Israel, where he learned piano, leading to a career that has spanned nearly 60 years. With the New York Chamber Soloist Orchestra, an outstanding ensemble of distinguished virtuosi, these two famous musicians will present 2 Mozart concertos and a Brahms sonata. Tickets are available at the UA Presents box office at 520-621-3341 or online at uapresents.org. That number again, 621-3341. For Menachem Pressler, Richard Stoltzman, and the New York Chamber Soloists Orchestra.
The greatest Hanukkah on earth is coming up fast. It's coming to Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, December 5th at 4:30 p.m. Join us for the largest, best, and most enjoyable Hanukkah celebration of all, featuring a wonderful array of music, theater, dance, stories, and magic. Hanukkah comes to life at the Temple's 12th annual Festival of Lights as never before. Start by helping light the giant outdoor menorah on Country Club Road at 4:30 p.m. Then rejoice with the Avanim Rock Band, the Tucson Girls Chorus, Temple Emmanuel Youth and Teen Choirs, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and an array of great performers. Bring a menorah and 6 candles as we light up the night in a gorgeous finale that'll make this the most memorable Hanukkah celebration ever. The Hanukkah event is open to all. It's co-sponsored by KGUN 9 TV. If you want to join us for a great traditional brisket and latke dinner afterwards, call the temple at 520-327-4501 and make a reservation with your credit card. Remember, the show's free, but call to come for dinner. That's Sunday, December 5th, beginning at 4:30 p.m. The centennial edition of the greatest Hanukkah on Earth, 12, at Temple Emmanuel. Call 520-327-4501.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, Kvetch or Kfell, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com, call 520-327-4501, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us at the Apple iTunes Store or the website as very popular podcasts. Hanukkah is a coming in, starting just after Thanksgiving this year, Wednesday, December 1st, a happy holiday of lights, songs, latkes, and parties. We continue our pre-Hanukkah musical preview with a lovely Hanerot Halalu, the prayer we sing after lighting Hanukkah candles each night of the festival. We light these candles to celebrate the miracles that God did for our ancestors at this time of year, in this season, in that time long ago.
Oh,
That was Hanerot Halalu from the CD, A Hanukkah Celebration from the extraordinary Milken Foundation Project, records Jewish music at the highest level. Since we have now started our pre-Hanukkah preparations, I should note that there are only 17 more shopping days until Hanukkah. Get your candles and presents now. For example, at the Hanukkah Bazaar at Temple Emmanuel in Tucson this very morning and early afternoon. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi. How are you today?
I'm well. We started talking about food last week because of the Israeli Epicurean Gala about 10 days ago now. But your favorite dish is shikshuka, which is really quite a simple dish, isn't it? As long as we're on the subject of food.
Well, it is simple, but if you'll ask people about it, you'll find out in Israel there are hundreds of ways to do shakshuka, and each and every Israelian will argue with you that his way is the best shakshuka ever. So I would share with you my way of doing shakshuka and my wife's family way to do shakshuka.
Please.
And first of all, I'll tell that here in the States, I love doing shakshuka on Sunday mornings. That's the best time. You have time with your kids. They help you with in the kitchen, and you make it all together. Now, what is a shakshuka? Well, shakshuka is some kind of an omelet, you might say. But let's see how you prepare it, and then you'll understand what I mean. Well, first you need to cut onions. The best one are the shallot onions. You cut them into squares. You put them on a pan. You start frying them. Then you add some garlic in there. You can either do it with whole pieces of garlic or chopped garlic.
And any recipe that starts with sautéing shallots and garlic is going to taste good. It's just by definition.
Right. Oh, and I forgot to say, you need to fry them in olive oil.
Olive oil, of course.
Don't use any other canola or soya or other weird stuff of oil that people don't really use. Yeah. So you cook them, you fry them in olive oil. If you like spicy food, you can add at this point some hot peppers, chop them and add some hot peppers. As much as you add more, it will be more spicy and you'll have more for yourself because probably all the other people will say it's too spicy for them. So that's a good way to get more shakshuka. After you do that, then you add a lot of chopped tomatoes. You cut the tomatoes into squares, not too small, not too big. And if you can get really sweet tomatoes, that's the best way to have it. And then you let it about, well, probably 10 minutes to fry with the tomatoes. You add on top of that some paprika. You can add sweet paprika and also some hot paprika, spicy one. You can add some salt, some pepper, stuff like that. And when it's really hot and boiling, then you break the eggs in. Now, you break eggs on top of it like you would do a sunny side up.
Mm-hmm.
You put as many eggs as you'd like. If it's for a family, you can put 6 eggs, 7 eggs. And then you cover it with something. Let it keep cooking, okay, mm-hmm. frying. But the trick is to try and get it off the fire while it's still like a sunny side up, where the yellow part of the egg is still, you know,
soft and
nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way to have it. And then you put it on the plate, you take a real good white bread, and you eat, and you eat, and you eat, and that's the best dish ever.
It's the perfect breakfast, isn't it?
It is. With you should have dark Turkish coffee alongside, but other than that, it's the best. Yeah.
Thanks, Guy. I'm going to go get something to eat. We will talk next week.
B'tavon.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant in the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi. Please forgive me.
Oh, well, you know, I'm in that business.
I've opened another restaurant.
Downtown?
Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, 135 South 6. I got to tell you, I am so excited about it. We have created an absolutely gorgeous space where the former Barrio Grill was located. And the food, well, you know my food.
Your food is the best I've ever had. Don't tell my wife. Although she agrees. So you're creating magic food, as she calls it, downtown. What's the best way for people to make reservations to try the new place?
Just give us a call at 623-7700 or go online at downtownkitchen.com. We're serving lunch Monday through Saturday, dinner 7 days a week, happy hour, late night Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and all with prices so low, you can afford to eat here every day.
I would love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Attention Arizona taxpayers! You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, formerly known as CHEDER. Here's how. The State of Arizona Private School Tax Credit allows Arizona taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, allowing scholarships for children in kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at the Tucson Hebrew Academy and the Jewish Community Center. If you make your donation today, you'll get 100% of your money back on your Arizona state income tax. A tax credit is not a deduction. Rather, it's money that comes directly back to you in your state tax return. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, please call 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. The deadline to take your tax credit is December 31st, so call or sign up online now.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We were talking about your fairly recent trip to India last couple of weeks and some of the similarities and differences. You know, India is famous for its caste system, the Brahmins at the top, supposedly the untouchables at the bottom. I know there have been changes. The British surely tried to make changes in the caste system, not necessarily with success. It's been compared even to the ancient Hebrew caste system, the Israelite caste system, which we still preserve to some degree, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, high priest, lesser priest. It's similar in some ways, but kind of different too, isn't it?
Well, I think there are a lot of similarities and differences, and you picked a good place to start. The people we came into closest contact with in India, our tour director, his boss, who was a woman, and one of his friendly rivals, who's a tour director who normally handles French and Italian-speaking groups, but is, of course, fluent in English, as are most educated Indians. All three of these people were Brahmins, and they let you know it very quickly. You can tell from their demeanor. And they were all highly educated. They all had at least a master's degree, if not a PhD, from a world-famous institution. So one of the things that my group found a little distressing was that each of the three gave different answers to the most basic questions about Hindu practice and belief, like what can and can't you eat, for example. So one guy who was our tour director said no meat of any kind, to include eggs. Okay, his boss said, well, no cows, of course, but chicken and goat and lamb are all fine, and we all eat eggs. And the other guy who works with French and Italian-speaking groups said, well, there's a theory about what you're not supposed to eat if you're a Brahmin, but I eat everything. So these were three distinctly different points of view, and the group said to me, well, which one's lying? Which one is right? And, you know, my answer was basically, if you take any three Jews and ask them what it means to keep kosher, or what it means to be Jewish, or what the most important precepts of Judaism are, you'll get widely different answers, and you'll certainly get different types of practice. So both religions or both systems of civilization are very, very old, very complicated, different schools of thought, and different practices have evolved, even though Hinduism has never really spread beyond India's borders, except through the Indian diaspora. I mean, there are Indians in Trinidad and Indians in South Africa and all that, but you can't convert to Hinduism. You have to be born a Hindu in order to practice Hinduism and to be regarded as a Hindu. So every Hindu is originally from India. I mean, or his or her ancestors are from India. That's a fairly significant difference. But in terms of the caste system, Looks like we're going to have to discuss this next week because I've taken too much time as usual. But it is a very important and interesting question. And it also, like most other things in India, has evolved enormously in the past 50 years or so since partition and since the British left.
Yeah, it, very interesting subject. And, you know, as you say, we talk about two Jews, three opinions. That is certainly true, not only about political events, but about our own culture. So clearly a commonality. Thanks, Tom. We will continue this next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. The old rabbi is in the hospital, barely conscious, surrounded by worried congregants. What a great speaker. His sermons were so inspiring, one says. He's the best rabbi ever, another agrees. A great fundraiser, too. He took such good care of his family. He always had time for them, no matter how busy he was. And what a brilliant teacher, says another. He could patiently explain Torah, Talmud, everything to anyone, no matter how hard it was or how ignorant the student. And a community leader, too. He was the best. After that, everyone fell silent. After a little calm, the rabbi weakly opened his eyes and said, "And about my modesty, you say nothing?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Family dynamics play a central role in the whole book of Genesis, from Adam and Eve and their loving sons, Cain and Abel, through the intricacies of Joseph's awful relationships with his brothers. In fact, you can easily claim that the Torah teaches us all about family life by showing us how not to do it. But the most complicated of all the families of Genesis, and we began the book with the first older brother in history murdering his younger sibling, the most complex and intricate of all the dysfunctional family groups we encounter is surely that of our great ancestor Jacob, with his four wives and 13 children. In this week's Torah portion of Vayishlach, Jacob is returning to his homeland of Canaan, someday to be known as Israel, when he hears rumors of the approach of his fearsome and feared brother Esau, headed his way accompanied by 400 armed men. Jacob is in a panic. Seeking to save at least half his family from utter destruction, he divides his household in two. In the darkness of the night before his coming encounter with Esau's mini army, Jacob crosses alone to a small island in the middle of a tributary of the Jordan River. There he encounters a representative of God, perhaps a man, perhaps an angel, perhaps a spirit from a dream. The text is ambiguous, but one thing is clear. This enemy wrestles with Jacob all night, and when neither can prevail, the two reach a truce as dawn breaks. The conclusion of this encounter includes an important change for Jacob. He is given a new name, Yisrael, Israel, one who wrestles with God. Jacob, now also called Israel, goes on to meet Esau, and surprisingly, the brothers resolve their lifelong differences. It's an important act of forgiveness and reconciliation, a kind of modeling that will matter for Jacob's own children when Joseph and his brothers ultimately reunite a generation later, after similarly disastrous sibling rivalries. Unfortunately, the rest of Jacob's family life remains problematic, filled with conflict and complexity, tsoras and heartbreak. But at least one example is created of a way to emerge from the heartache of family struggle. If we learn to encounter God first, to wrestle with the divine, then we may be able to find our way back to those we love. Want to know how to stay young forever and how people make money manipulating your dream? Find out from our guest this morning, Arlene Weintraub, author of the book Selling the Fountain of Youth, when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly,
Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A huge fraud case broke this week in one of the largest Holocaust compensation funds, perhaps the largest Jewish fund in the world. Employees responsible for reparation payments to Holocaust victims have been charged with stealing $42 million from the compensation fund set up by Germany in 1951, the Claims Conference. U.S. authorities say that 17 people, including six who worked for the Claims Conference itself, fabricated thousands of fraudulent payments from the Conference on Jewish Material Claims against Germany, directing $42 million away from the fund while pocketing millions for themselves. Each of the defendants played a role in creating, filing, and processing fraudulent claims on behalf of non-qualifying applicants and dividing up the spoils, said FBI's New York Assistant Director in Charge, Janice Fedarsik. Funds established and financed by the German government to aid Holocaust survivors were siphoned off by the greedy and not paid out as intended to the worthy. Victims of the scheme were those who had already suffered at the hands of Nazi persecution, only to have their experiences exploited again. This brazen miscarriage of the compensation program is in its own way a kind of crime against humanity, Fedarsik said. The 5,400 illegal claims went primarily to Jews from Eastern Europe living in Brooklyn. Some of the elderly recipients weren't eligible, but they certainly suffered during the war, said Greg Schneider, executive director of the Claims Conference. We're still trying to sort this all out, indeed. The two funds allegedly targeted were the Article II Fund, which makes monthly payments of $411 to survivors of Nazi persecution who make less than $16,000 a year, and who either lived in hiding or in a Jewish ghetto for 18 months, or were incarcerated for at least 6 months in a concentration or forced labor camp, and the Hardship Fund, which provides a one-time grant of $3,600 to those forced to flee Nazi persecution as refugees. Very bureaucratic. The Claims Conference administrators became suspicious of problems in the program in December of 2009 and asked the FBI to investigate. It was a major operation. Among those charged in the scheme are the former director of the Article II and Hardship Funds, other past and present Claims Conference employees, two law firm employees, a notary document forger, and several others. If convicted, the perpetrators of the scheme could face up to 20 years in jail. It seems superfluous to comment on a story like this, but being a rabbi, of course I'll do so anyway. Is there a greater moral crime than defrauding Holocaust survivors out of their small, complicated compensation from Germany for their intense suffering during the Shoah? We should note that the Claims Conference, like so many Jewish organizations, has often been the subject of intense criticism over the years. Issy Liebler, former head of the World Jewish Congress, was among its harshest critics, saying, among other things, in an article in the Jerusalem Post about 3 years ago, that the richest Jewish foundation in the world has still failed to provide adequate financial assistance to elderly and sick Holocaust survivors who live in abject poverty in the twilight of their lives. An organization which boasts that it currently holds in trust $900 million in assets, yet fails to rectify such a condition, must be held accountable for one of the greatest scandals in contemporary Jewish life. Liebler also cited allegations of incompetence, impropriety, and cover-ups, as well as the absence of an independent review board, bureaucratization, and domination by a small clique. Sadly, it looks like the critics of the Claims Conference were right all along. Yuck.
All day long I bitty-bitty-bum. If I were a wealthy man.
It's been a really sad couple of weeks for Fiddler on the Roof aficionados. Jerry Bock, composer of Fiddler on the Roof, died last week at the age of 81.
Shockingly, just 2 weeks after the death of Joseph Stein, who wrote the book for the show, Bach wrote the scores of other Broadway hits, including Fiorello, whose star Tom Bosley, also Jewish, also died last week, She Loves Me, Mr. Wonderful, and The Rothschilds. But Jerry Bach and lyricist Sheldon Harnick created their greatest musical in 1964, a show that will last as long as theater exists and that many people believe is the greatest musical ever. Bach recalled later that Fiddler almost didn't make it to the stage. They played the score for several producers who rejected it. You know, it was too Jewish. The problem was that once we finished our first draft, no one wanted to touch it, Bach recalled. They thought it was very insular and parochial, that we'd run out of an audience in 6 weeks. It had no appeal to anybody but Hadassah. It was director and choreographer Jerome Robbins who saw something in the material, and Bach and Harnick got cracking. Robbins kept asking us day after day, what is the piece about? He would not let us squirm away, Bach said. Someone, neither Bach nor Sheldon Harnick remember who, said, tradition. And Fiddler on the Roof found its voice. Fiddler became one of the most successful musicals of all time. It ran for almost 8 years on Broadway and has had more than 25,000 productions all over the world since then. And, of course, the movie has been wildly successful and still gets played. Jerry Bach got the Tony Award for Best Musical and Pulitzer Prize for Drama with Sheldon Harnick for the musical Fiorello in 59, and he also won the Tony for Best Composer for the 1964 musical Fiddler. He spoke at Joe Stein's funeral just 10 days before his own death.
Sunrise, sunset.
Fiddler on the Roof's composer, Jerry Bach, is gone at 81, but of course his music will live on forever. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish Arlene Weintraub, the author of Selling the Fountain of Youth, How the Anti-Aging Industry Made a Disease Out of Getting Old and Made Billions. Arlene spent many years as a senior health writer in New York City headquarters of Business Week, wrote hundreds of articles that explored both the science and business of health. She's won awards from the New York Press Club, the Association of Healthcare Care Journalists, the Foundation for Biomedical Research, the American Society of Business Publication Editors. Her book is I think it's threatening the healthcare industry in some really interesting and important ways. She's also been published in USA Today, US News and World Report, Technology Review, and many other media outlets. How has the industry responded to your book?
Well, it's kind of interesting that the industry has not responded directly to me. However, one of the big anti-aging chains did something quite interesting, which is they put a tab on their website that says Selling the Fountain of Youth. It doesn't make any reference to the book, but they try to make a case that they're not really selling the Fountain of Youth and that they don't make any guarantees that these therapies will keep you young and prevent you from growing old, that really they're just trying to improve your quality of life. And I heard that quite often while I was reporting the book. And I think it's an interesting argument because, first of all, they call it the anti-aging industry. So if they're not against aging, why do they call it that? And in fact, they do make claims that you can take these substances for the rest of your life and they will keep you young. So there's kind of a conflict there that I never quite understood about them.
You know, I have this sort of weird feeling about the whole anti-aging thing, and the more I read your book, the more I thought about it. You know, the whole baby boom generation grew up as the first generation to ever succeed quickly in school, the first generation ever to rebel, the first generation to create a counterculture, the first generation to sell out, and then suddenly they became the first generation to age, and maybe they just didn't want to do it.
Right, and I heard that quite often. They don't want to age like their parents aged. They don't want to get frail. They don't want to have that sort of slow decline towards a nursing home. They want to keep playing with their grandkids and skiing and surfing and all those things that they did when they were young. And so this is a very appealing sales pitch to them that all you have to do is replace your hormones back to where they were when you were 30 and you'll be 30 again.
There must be some reason that people think it does something.
Well, hormones make you feel good. You know, anybody who's been through puberty can tell you that. And these are drugs. They do have a powerful effect on how you feel, and many of them do feel as if they're getting relief from symptoms. Especially menopausal women will tell you, "Oh, my hot flashes went away, my libido came back," and that's a huge population of people that are going through menopause right now, and they're a big target of the anti-aging industry.
The anti-aging industry is a little more complicated than we might think. It's not just giant drug companies, but it's also compounding pharmacies and sort of boutique aspects to this whole, I don't know, industry, I guess. Who's really calling the shots?
Well, in fact, a lot of it is really under the radar. It's operating, I call it a shadow industry, because it's operating outside the realm of major healthcare providers and major pharmaceutical companies. And compounding pharmacy is a big and growing industry, but it's really mom and pop pharmacists that make their own versions of drugs. And they're allowed to do that in this country. It is legal, but they've kind of started this side business of targeting mostly menopausal women with these alternative estrogen and progesterone products that they say are safer than the estrogen products that were shown to cause cancer a few years back in the famous Women's Health Initiative study. And just as it was with human growth hormone, they're making claims that are not scientifically sound and that are not necessarily true, and they're selling estrogen products that are equally dangerous as the ones that were shown to increase the risk of breast cancer in that famous study, yet women believe that they're safe and natural because these pharmacists and the doctors tell them, oh, they're derived from sources like soy and yams, and so they're completely natural and safe, and a lot of women have fallen for this.
You know, a variety of poisons are derived from purely natural sources, aren't they?
That's true. Yes.
I mean, curare comes from, you know, a plant, so it must be natural. Some of the luminaries in this field are not exactly what we would think of as scientists, you know, Suzanne Summers. Why do people, is it really just the same kind of, oh, okay, I want to live forever and these people are promising me something? Is it just a shell game?
I thought about that a lot. Suzanne Summers has had a tremendous impact on this industry, and you kind of have to wonder, what is it about our culture that makes us glorify these Hollywood celebrities who don't have any medical training.
Or maybe any acting talent either. I mean, somehow Three's Company has qualified her to teach us how to not get old.
Right, but it's incredible. And she got on Oprah last year when I was reporting this book and was actually in an anti-aging clinic at the time she was on, and their phones were ringing off the hook. I mean, people are desperate not to grow old, and they will take advice from anybody if they're famous, and I don't quite understand it.
Are any of these anti-aging hormone treatments, drugs, medical solutions, have any of them been proven to help?
Only exercise, and to the credit of this industry, some doctors that are part of it do actually provide exercise counseling. Some of them do it right in their offices. The problem is they don't have any control over what patients do when they leave the office. So they can't force their patients to exercise, and they have the same problem that every doctor in the world has, which is they can tell their patients to exercise, but most of them won't do it. But other than that, no, aside from eating right, no, nothing else has been proven to slow the aging process.
And there's new stuff that comes on the market, you know, what seems like every month. I never pronounce this right, but the acai berry that looks like a kai that comes from Brazil, that's supposed to stop the aging process, filled with antioxidants that will make us go on forever and be younger?
Right, the acai berry, that's how you say it. And when I went to these anti-aging conferences, people selling acai in every shape and form, juice, supplements, they were all over the place at these trade shows, trying to get people to sign up for subscriptions to them, so they would get, you know, cases of this juice delivered to their home once a month. And again, it has not been proven. In fact, the Center for Science and the Public Interest in Washington, D.C. came out with a warning last year, a public warning saying, you know, none of this is scientifically based. Of course, it's a berry, which means it has antioxidants, but that doesn't mean it's going to make you younger or help you lose weight, which is the other big claim they make.
So my favorite anti-aging claim is the one for red wine that explains why the French are thinner and live long lives, even though they eat lots of fat and meat and don't seem to exercise. Resveratrol. Sorry. Hebrew I can do. Is there any truth to this?
Again, it's the same thing as acai. There, what happened was a scientist at Harvard made a discovery that resveratrol had incredible anti-aging powers in mice. It improved their lifespan by about 30%. This has never translated to humans, and in fact, this scientist, I've spoken to him many times, he does take resveratrol supplements, but he's the first to say this has not been proven in humans. And in the meantime, millions of people have been scammed by these ads on the internet, which I'm sure everybody has seen. If you do any kind of search related to aging, they'll come up. Free trial of resveratrol. We'll send it to you. You can try it for 15 days. We won't charge you anything. Just give us your credit card number. And, of course, it turns out not to be free. People are signing up for monthly shipments of resveratrol supplements and not realizing that they're signing up for them. And then they often can't get out of these schemes. And so their credit cards just keep getting charged. And, of course, how can you tell in 15 days if you're getting younger anyway?
Isn't there an interesting little loophole? The FDA doesn't call aging a disease because it's not. It happens to everybody. And so when they go to license stuff, they don't really have to have the same level of efficacy proven?
Right. Well, that's true of all supplements in this country. Under the law, they don't have to prove efficacy. They're fairly free to make lots of claims. And in fact, a lot of legislators have tried to close that loophole, but not with much success. The lobby for the supplement industry, as well as for the compounding industry, is pretty strong. They've given millions of dollars to politicians to keep these laws on their side, and they've succeeded.
And you know, they have Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Oz on their side, apparently.
Right.
Well, that ought to be reason enough to follow them, huh?
Right.
I want to thank Arlene Weintraub for a great visit on Too Jewish. Her book is called Selling the Fountain of Youth, How the Anti-Aging Industry Made a Disease Out of Getting Old and Made Billions of Your Money. Well, somebody's money. The book's available everywhere. Thanks, Arlene. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Would you like to make a difference in this world without costing yourself anything? The Mitzvah Corps of Temple Emmanuel helps people in need with their mortgages and utilities and other emergencies of life. We've helped many people stay in their own homes and keep afloat long enough to get back on their feet. The Mitzvah Corps has virtually no administrative overhead and no long processing for those in emergency situations. Your state tax credit donation of $200 per individual or $400 per family costs you nothing. The Mitzvah Corps is a state tax credit 501c3 philanthropy, and your contribution is deductible right off your state tax bill and can also be used as a federal tax deduction. Consult your tax professional with any questions.
You can help the Mitzvah Corps help people in our community by sending your donation, check or credit card of $200 per individual or $400 per family to the Mitzvah Corps, care of Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, Tucson, Arizona, 85716, or call 520-327-4501 for more information.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Richard Stoltzman, the Grammy Award-winning clarinetist, probably the best clarinet player in the world. Our playout this morning comes from the CD Reggae Hanukkah, the Israeli version of Al HaNisim, the prayer for Hanukkah, for the miracles and wonders you, God, did for our ancestors at this time in those days. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.